Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Suffering teaches lessons that an easy life can never teach. Job's terrible trials brought him face to face with God. Today, a look at the life of the Apostle Paul, a man with a God-given thorn in the flesh. In a moment, how to handle your thorn. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Our series is Nothing Else Matters, How the Glory of God Gives Meaning to All of Life. Now, examples from the Bible on how to suffer for God's glory.
I walked a mile with pleasure, she chatted all the way, but left me none the wiser for all she had to say. I walked a mile with sorrow, and ne'er a word said she, but oh, the things I learned when sorrow walked with me. Suffering to the glory of God. Let me give you a second example, and that comes to us from the Apostle Paul, and you know the story so well you need not even turn to the text. The Apostle Paul is going through a time of difficulty, and in 2 Corinthians he says, I had the temptation to be proud. You see, because he was given so many revelations, people would say, oh, Paul, he's got a direct hotline to God. Look at the way in which he's writing inspired scripture. Jesus personally appealed to him and appeared to him. First of all, appealed to him and then appeared to him. And so people began to say, oh, you know, Paul just walks on water. He says, lest I become proud as a result of the abundance of revelations given to me. There was given to me a thorn in the flesh. We don't know exactly what the thorn was. The Greek word is scallops. It is a stake in the flesh, probably some physical pain. And the Apostle Paul cries up to God three times and says, take it away, take it away, take it away. God says, no, I'm not taking it away, but I will supply grace. Chapter 12, verse 9 of 2 Corinthians. He says, God says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is perfected in weakness. And Paul says, most gladly will I therefore rather glory in mine infirmity, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. If it takes pain to give me power, I'll accept it from God's hand. Let me say this, that you and I, because of the pride of our hearts, we have within us our heart, which is a temple whereby we worship ourselves. All that really matters is us, where we live, how much we earn, what other people think of us, our health. Nothing wrong being concerned with those things, but that's as far as it goes, and we do not have compassion. We can't see beyond our own need, and in our pride and in our self-will and in our self-defensiveness, there we are, and God comes along and weakens us. Because what God wants to say is, you need a new sense of dependence upon me. And if you want my power, Paul says, I will glory in insults. He says, I will glory. Let me give you the whole list. He says, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecution, calamities. I'm content with them because I see God in them. And when I am weak, he says, then am I strong. I could become angry at God. I could close my heart toward him. I could doubt his goodness. I could become bitter. I have all of those options, but I choose rather to see God in this affliction and have a whole new sense of dependence that my pride might be brought low. And you can suffer for the glory of God when God does that in your life. Another example is we can glorify God in suffering when it extends the gospel. When it extends the gospel. You know, the Apostle Paul was in prison, very probably in Rome, chained to guards. This is what he said in Philippians chapter 1. Listen to it carefully. He's saying, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And now most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Paul says, here I am in prison, confined, but I see God in this. I have the opportunity to witness in prison. And if my suffering gives me a platform on which people are willing to listen to my calamities, and not to listen because of the calamities, but because of what I'm willing to endure for Christ, and I endure it cheerfully, I'm witnessing right where the gospel needs to be, and my witness is inspiring others to be bold too. Paul says, hey, I'm content to be in jail if my suffering does that. Some of you work in work environments that are very, very difficult. I know that there are those that I've talked to who say that in your work environment there are all kinds of innuendos, there's all kinds of people who are trying to undercut one another. It is a very unkind, unclean environment, and you want to get out of it. And I say to you, before you get out of it, remember this, that you are the best witness these dear people have. And if you're suffering, if you're going to work and you're discovering hardship, there is a platform on which you can live out the gospel, not in a judgmental way, but in a way that honors God, and to be there for people when the bottom falls out of their lives. Then remember, that kind of suffering is good, because after all, it extends the gospel. And Paul says, I'm willing to put up with this as long as I have the opportunity to tell somebody about Jesus. And in that sense, Paul glorifies God right where he is. Let me give you another example, and for this we turn to the Old Testament. And that is, sometimes we suffer for future generations. Let me tell you the context of the book of Ruth. There is a woman by the name of Naomi. Naomi marries a man by the name of Elimelech. They leave Bethlehem, which is known as the house of bread, in Hebrew, Beit Lechem, house of bread, because there's a famine in the house of bread, and they go to Moab. And along the way, they choose to live there in Moab for 10 long years. They have two sons, and suddenly her husband dies, Elimelech dies, Naomi is left a widow, and then, of all things, her two sons also die, and she's left with two daughter-in-laws. So Naomi has heard that Bethlehem is doing better economically. There's some bread there now, so she's leaving Moab, and now she wants to go to Bethlehem. And the two daughter-in-laws accompany her. One of them turns away, Orpha, I should say. Did you know that Oprah is a misspelling of the word Orpha? I think that's Oprah Winfrey. That's why she has such a unique and special name. Orpha turns back, but Ruth decides to go with her and says, I want your God to be my God. All right, that's the context. Now listen to how Naomi is responding. Naomi, the name means pleasant. The people in Bethlehem say, hey, Naomi's back. That's great. Listen to how Naomi is interpreting this in verse 20 of chapter 1. Do not call me Naomi, or pleasant. Call me Mara. The word Mara means bitter. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has brought this calamity upon me? At least give her credit for knowing that her calamity ultimately came from God, though there were secondary causes. But here she's saying, call me bitter. I left full. I had a husband, two sons. Now I'm a widow, and here I am. God has dealt bitterly with me. Is there a widow that is listening to me today, and that's the way you feel? You've lost a husband, maybe you've lost a child to boot, you've lost your identity, perhaps you've lost your friends, and you feel like Naomi. Don't call me pleasant, call me bitter. Now, if we'd gone to Naomi and said, why do you think God brought that calamity upon you? She'd have probably said, I have no reason at all to know. Now, of course, God wanted to do a work in her heart for her to accept her calamity, and later on she does, because things turned out pretty well for her. But listen to the way in which the book ends. You'll notice it says, Ruth marries Boaz, and then verse 17 of chapter 4, and the women of the neighborhood, after Ruth has a child with Boaz, the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. Naomi is actually the grandmother. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. And your jaw drops. And Ruth shows up in the genealogy of Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 1. If you'd have said, Naomi, why is God being bitter with you, or at least you think that he's being that way, why? She would not have been able to look centuries into the future and to know that the reason that God brought all of this about, certainly one of the primary reasons, is that Ruth might be converted to the true God, the God of Israel. And secondly, God wanted a Moabitess in the genealogy of Jesus to show that the gospel is really for everybody and not just for the Jews. Listen, you don't know the half of the reasons why you're suffering.
Well, this is Pastor Luther, and absolutely, you and I do not know half the reasons why we are suffering. And sometimes when we try to pry into God's diary and insist that he tell us and that we find the meaning of it all, we can very easily be disappointed. It's an opportunity for us to trust God to do right by us, and that we know that our suffering is intended for the glory of God in this life and for the increase of the glory of God in the life to come. So glad that you have joined us for this very important series of messages, because it is true that at the end of the day, nothing else really does matter than the glory of God. As I pointed out previously, the messages came about because I was in a meeting with five or six different people speaking about revival, and suddenly one of them began to talk about God's glory, and I leaned back in a chair and said, now I get it. Nothing else really matters except the glory of God. Hope that you stay tuned, because in a moment you're going to be given information as to how these messages can be yours. And of course, we always encourage you to go to our website, where there are many resources that are available. We make this website and our resources available because we want you to have as much information, as much encouragement as you can in your walk with God. Thanks again for joining us today on Running to Win. We consider you to be our partners. Thank you for your prayers, for your gifts, for your encouragement, because together we're making a difference.
Erwin Lutzer with more of God's glory in our suffering. Another message on Nothing Else Matters, how the glory of God gives meaning to all of life. Next time, more on God's ultimate purpose. We'd like to send you the entire series on the glory of God on CD. It's our thank you for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to us at Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.